This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Two men in the studio, Jesse and Nathan. Jesse's a chef, and we were just having a discussion before we started about chefs being control freaks. I find that quite extraordinary, Jesse.
Yeah, how odd.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Nathan, welcome.
Thank you.
This is the first time on the wireless view, isn't it?
It is. I'm very
so
nervous.
So you're a bit scared, aren't you?
I am.
We're just going to have a chat. There just happens to be a thing in front of you that looks a bit odd. So you guys are about to open Kettle Black, which will be your third venue.
Yeah, well, of the current batch of cafes, yeah, we've had a couple of ones in the past, but this is probably the one that we're going to be the most proud of, yeah. Mm.
Well, people know Top Paddock because it's won design awards and is very cool and funky and difficult to get into because you're so busy. Talk us through the three. So there's Two Birds, One Stone, Top Paddock, and now Kettle Black opening this week.
Yep.
Why are they all different? Why do you need three? Isn't one enough pain?
Yeah, I think we must be gluttons for punishment. We've always sort of loved the design aspect of it and building something from the ground up. Mm-hmm. Jesse's been working with us at Top Paddock as a chef since we opened about 18 months ago.
Yep.
And we pretty quickly saw something pretty amazing in him. So he's now come on board as one of the owners of the
new
business.
And he looks like a celebrity as well.
He is. He's a celebrity chef in the making.
There we go.
Chef
standby. We've found you a new bit of talent.
Yeah. Right.
So it was just an opportunity for us to get involved in a new project and have Jesse come on board as one of the owners.
So what's been the genesis? You said there's been other cafes beforehand. Let's take a huge leap back. You finished high school, Nathan. What happened then?
Yeah, look, I finished high school and I'd always wanted to work as a restaurant manager or a hotel manager. So I went to William Anglis for 4 years and did a degree in hotel management.
Yep.
I'm the one. Yeah.
Yep.
working in restaurants from when I was, you know, pretty young. And then did that for a number of years. Met my now wife about 18 years ago, and she was a chef doing her apprenticeship. So we kind of were working together in restaurants, and we always had a dream to open our own cafe.
Yep.
And I've always been interested in design and fit out. I wanted to do architecture, but I kind of thought, I'd rather just get straight into it. So
and
this was the way I got around it.
Spend it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just been a progression, I think, from there.
So you talked about the cafes that have come before. Would we know them?
The first one we did was Apt in Elphington, which was back in the day. It won Cafe of the Year with Delicious Magazine, which was a big award for us. Pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did Liar Liar in Hawthorne.
Yep.
Three Bags Full in Abbotsford.
Yes.
And then, the current crop would be Two Birds, One Stone and Top Paddock. I think for us, Top Paddock was probably the chance to really try something different in Melbourne. I guess, as you know, there's a lot of cafes that are in Melbourne at the moment and seem to be kind of cut and pasting. And, you know, we kind of look at it and think, why not do something different?
Has each one been an evolution of what you've learned from the previous one?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think not just the design aspect of it and the flow and the way we staff it, but definitely with the food. I think getting Jesse on board 18 months ago really kind of pushed us out of our comfort zone with regards to food. I mean, we've been smashing avocado for years.
And Jesse putting feta and lemon with it, good Lord.
Yeah.
How visionary.
I guess Jesse came along and kind of said, why would you want to smash something as beautiful as an avocado? So it's definitely been an evolution. And I think with Kettle Black opening next week, we've kind of wanted to take that to another level as well.
Excellent. Gives us a lovely segue, Jesse. Are you from the Gold Coast or are you?
Byron Bay.
You're from Byron.
Yeah, I grew up in Byron, spent 30 years there.
Nice.
Yeah, and then I moved to Melbourne.
Right, where did the Gold Coast fit in, but Byron's not that far.
Yeah.
What brought you to Melbourne?
A couple of things. Mm-hmm. Food culture was definitely one of them.
Yep.
The platform down here for creativity is amazing. It's just enormous.
Mm-hmm.
The audience is hungry for something new constantly.
Yep.
And when I met these guys, when I met Nathan and the crew, I really saw that as an opportunity to create that platform to be able to build on, and Top Paddock was perfect for it. But the other reason I fell in love as well. That always drags people to a place that they're pretty unfamiliar with.
Mm, I hear this often with Shep. I fell in love and I moved to Guatemala.
Yeah, that's right. There we go.
Yeah, great move.
So I came down. Obviously, the biggest pull was for work wise for experience and to especially when I found Nathan and the crew. It was like, we could do anything. You know, it was that opportunity to really expand. Actually, first time I came down, I found a lot of the food quite uninspiring in cafes.
Yep.
Restaurants aside, restaurants were great.
But then when we talk about Melbourne, and this is going to come up a little later, this whole Melbourne versus Sydney thing, which is probably a discussion we don't need to have, Melbourne does cafes incredibly well.
Yes.
And yet I kind of take your point that, you know, there's only so many ways you can serve bacon and eggs.
That's right.
So let's think outside the square, and I think that sort of gets to where you guys are going.
That was what it was. I've always enjoyed, obviously, coming from a restaurant background, and the chefs that we employ now in Kettle Black are from a restaurant background.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the sacrifice for working days, you know, the benefits are obvious. You get nights off.
Yes.
Generally, the sacrifice is the lower quality of food, or the food standards are a lot lower.
Yep.
What we wanted to do is turn that whole thing around and have incredibly good quality food during the day. And we use the same suppliers as Attica, same suppliers as Vudemon.
Yep.
We're using those same great suppliers, the same skill level, the same principles and methods of cookery.
It's just at a different time of the day.
Yep, and a different price bracket.
So what are you doing that's so different? What's the revolutionary part of this?
Kettle Black is completely induction. It's a gas-free kitchen. We only have 4 hob induction for a 100-seat cafe. Because we've decided to... That's what everyone said.
Stupidity. The joy of induction is it's so quick.
Yes, very quick. It's
incredible.
And so we've incorporated different cooking methods. So a lot of things don't even touch a pan. I was really frustrated for the last 20-odd years of cooking in cafes and restaurants. This turn-and-burn cooking has just been everywhere.
Indeed. My next guest is on the phone. He's John Lawson. He's a big, bad, handsome man. How are you, mate?
Hello there. How are you?
Good, thank you. Happy with that as an introduction?
Oh, great, mate. Great.
Excellent. I'll introduce you to the boys in the studio first, Jesse and Nathan. Say hello to John.
Hey, Jesse and Nathan.
G'day, John.
Good morning, John.
These guys are about to open Kettle Black, which will be their third cafe. They're going to open that this week. So probably somewhere for you to go and get some coffee.
Yeah, that'd be great. Loving my coffee. Love my coffee in Melbourne.
Well, sort of.
Whereabouts is it?
South Melbourne.
Oh, great. That's not far from me.
We'll send you a tweet.
Yeah.
Hey, interesting that you mentioned you love coffee and you love Melbourne. We are about to embark on a bit of a culinary challenge. It's Melbourne versus Sydney for the Flory Institute. You're part of the Melbourne team. It's a very special little event. So 3 chefs from Melbourne and 3 from Sydney. Sydney has Guillaume Brahmi with them captaining their team.
Yes.
And we have the very clever... Scott Pickett of St. Crispin's and the Estelle, who's captaining the Victorian team. Who did you guys fight for the captaincy?
Did Scott and I fight?
Yeah.
No, he phoned me up and he said, I want you on board the team. So, yeah, I was delighted to be asked by Scotty.
Who's the third member of your team? Chef.
What's that?
Who's the third member of the team?
We've got Stewie McVeigh.
Yep.
And then also, so Scotty's just the captain. We've got Stewie McVeigh from Union Food.
Food and Wine in Escavale.
And then we've got Pierre Roloff, our pastry chef.
From,
he does his dessert.
That's it.
So we've got a cracking team.
Nice one. And Sydney's, who've Sydney got? Apart from Guillaume, they've got Brad.
Brent.
Yes, somebody boring.
Brent, I think Bay Robertson.
Yep.
And one other guy.
Nobody that's anyone's ever heard of, really, is it?
Nah, Melbourne's on the ball with this one. We're really excited. We've been playing around with dishes, and I don't know, hopefully we're one step ahead of the game.
Right. So what surprises have you got in store? I mean, they can't play football or anything up there, so I think we could go with something with a sporting motif.
What have we got in store?
Yeah, there could be somebody listening. We don't want to give them any hints.
No, I wasn't going to give anything away today.
This is happening at Crown at the Palladium, and people can buy a table. Not only do they get to eat the wonderful courses you guys are preparing, but there's also a bit of theatre about it. So there's a bit of action on the stage where you guys are actually cooking off against one another on stage. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to be a great night. I mean, the whole thing is done, the whole judging is done based on the demonstration, and you know, some top judges there by all accounts.
Well, Jacques Raymond's heading up the judging panel, so there's a bit of Melbourne bias there already.
Who knows? It might sort of might sway our way for that. I don't know.
But, I would find that extraordinary. He's far too delightful, man.
Big demonstrations going on, and you know, the main thing is executing your dish in front of everyone. So so that would be cool. And then obviously everyone at the table can actually vote as well for the best dish.
Oh, so that's how it works. You actually got honest people in the crowd.
Yeah, they can vote for the best dish. So everyone will receive you know, Melbourne and Sydney dishes to taste. So we're looking at a maximum sort of 600 people in the Palladium, yeah.
Right. Pretty cheap too. No, it's not really. $5,000 a table, which is a standard table of 10, or $6,500 for a VIP table, which includes a table of 10 as well, includes VIP drinks prior to the event with the opportunity to mingle with the high-profile chefs and judges. I believe that includes you, sir. Best seats in the house next to the stage, a gift for each guest, and a company logo on the table. That's very fancy.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's pretty worth it. I mean, table of 10, is it?
Yep. $650 a head. I could drink that in liquor over lunch.
Yeah.
As well, you know. Sorry, I shouldn't have gone there. Let's come back to the theme of this thing, which is a Melbourne versus Sydney challenge. Why is Melbourne better?
Oh, we're already on top of it. I think we're you know, caliber of chefs. You know, we've got some good boys in there. Why are we better? Well, we're only going to know on the day, I suppose, aren't we? But we're up for it. We've been taking it very seriously. We've done two tasting sessions already, one at Estelle and one at Number 8.
Yes.
So we've tweaked things. We've played around with a couple of dishes. You know, made a few mistakes, and we're looking set to go. We've got a few weeks to go left. That's it.
Excellent. One of the questions I did want to ask you: why did you choose Melbourne? You're clearly not from here. You're not a Bentley boy. Why did you choose Melbourne as a destination?
Well, it felt to me in a way. I came out here to open Gordon Ramsay's Maze, you know, four years ago.
Yes.
And just really excited about doing a bit more travelling. I was spending 3 years in New York before that.
Yep.
And wanted to travel more, and it was handy to me, and that. After all that kind of went disastrously wrong, I got more opportunities. So just happy to stay in Melbourne. So I'm here to stay now. So
you're now part of the Australian food revolution.
Yes,
showing the rest of the world how to do it. One of the things that I find extraordinary, we have and these guys are going to chime in a minute. They're both looking a bit scared at the minute. the caliber of chefs that we have visiting Australia for a whole variety of reasons, for Gourmet Escape, for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, for the Noosa Food and Wine Festival, for Good Food Month, Sydney and Melbourne. There just seems to be a better caliber of chef that we're seeing every year. We've hosted some of the finest chefs in the world here in Melbourne alone. What is it? Why are they coming here? What is the lure to Australia? Which is, you know, let's face it, we're at the arse end of the earth. It's a bloody long flight to anywhere apart from Asia. So why do you think there is this desire to come here and check out what we're doing?
I think a couple of things. I think there's a progression of what has been done as far as Food and Wine Festival, exactly what you said, and a build-up of chefs that have come along each year, so there's definitely a reputation now. And also, what a great way to get out of Europe or travel or do something, or going to Australia, especially if it's being paid for or, you know, being looked after or, you know, a great attraction. I think, you know, there's probably those two things are big factors.
Good factors that they are too. Jesse, do you agree with what Josh has got to say, that we've got something really incredible going on here?
Yeah, definitely. I think also, we're not tied down by tradition in Australia. So food traditions around the world are slowly being broken. But Australia, we've had this freedom with incredible quality ingredients, mm-hmm. easily accessible.
Yep.
We're growing most things now, which is pretty incredible. Well, 20 years ago, it was a lot harder.
Pop over the border and find some organic rice just growing just on the other side of the Murray River, which is extraordinary.
Exactly. Porcinis.
Mm.
Porcinis are coming now.
Yep, they're on their way.
The guys down at the Otway Range is growing shiitake mushrooms on untreated eucalyptus logs in the forest.
We've got two in the cafe at the moment.
Oh, they're incredible.
It's just unreal. We've got two logs sitting in the cafe. Mm. That sort of stuff 20 years ago was incredibly hard to find. Mm. But the audience in Australia, I love how quickly it's moving and evolving in Australia as well. The customers are so keen to see us doing this stuff, evolve, you know, it's unreal.
Josh, a question for you, because I know you've done it. I'm sure you've done an appearance on the show. Has the MasterChef phenomena been a part of this evolution of our food knowledge?
I think, you know, I was just saying, it definitely gives exposure. I mean, the chefs that are coming over, you know, you see Heston on MasterChef and you see Heston's passion as far as the produce in Australia, what he's doing and what he's doing outside of Australia as far as talking about what we're doing in this country, what the passion is, what the drive of our chefs and the culture of our industry here.
And one of the reasons he's bringing the fat duck here for 6 months.
One of the reasons.
Yes.
You know, he wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't, you know, a food culture city. You know, he definitely wouldn't be doing it. He's very picky where he has restaurants. So, I mean, it's about these chefs coming over for me, and then when they leave, talking about to their friends, to their chef friends and stuff, what an amazing place Melbourne is and how, you know, how great it's grown. So then these guys keep coming back.
Indeed. And Nathan, the cornerstone to your success so far has been good produce.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think the better the produce, the less you need to do with it in a cafe environment, which is the key.
The less need to do with it anywhere. I mean, one of the things we have. Look, mate, I know you're in the middle of service, so what I'm going to suggest is that you...
Hang on, you called him in the middle of service?
Yeah. 20 past one on a Saturday lunchtime. He's absolutely in the middle of service. He's got a team of 97 people in there making prawn cocktails and putting steak on a grill.
We've got our tweezers and all sorts.
Exactly. Friday 15th of August at 6:30 at the Palladium at Crown. RSVPs are due very soon. You can contact perfectevents.com.au. It's all for the Florey Institute. It's actually all for medical research, which is a wonderful reason to do it. A huge cast of some of Australia's finest, including John Lawson. Thank you, mate, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Pete.
Thanks,
mate. Good speaking to you, mate. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Joy 94.9.
I have two fellows in the studio. We did start talking about... produce and cuisine and revolutions in food, and I want to go straight back to there. Jesse and Nathan are both here from Top Paddock, Two Birds and One Stone, and they will open Kettle Black. Is it Tuesday?
Yes, Tuesday.
Tuesday. Why not Monday?
Not quite ready.
Jesse's got to have a day off, does he?
Need to get the deliveries in.
That's right. Produce. No one's delivering on Sunday. So.
I thought you should be growing your own on the rooftop or something.
We are growing a lot of our herbs out the side. Mm-hmm. So we've got six hot houses down the side of the building.
Yep.
All with the heat lamps in the bottom, and so all our micro herbs are out there growing. Our small leaves, and but that all comes from our closed loop, our composting system that we've got set up too. So 100% organic waste free cafe.
Excellent.
Through a closed loop composting system. Then that compost gets then put transferred onto our microgreens back onto your plate again.
So wow, it's quite a circular.
The circle of life.
Yes.
That's the plan. We saw, you know, just those little areas that, you know, people don't often notice happening in a cafe, but we do. We see that waste, that organic waste food coming back on the plates. Not that there's much coming back.
No, well, I would hope not. I would hope people are eating it. So let's go back to this revolution, because I'm interested to discover, as somebody who eats out a lot for breakfast, it's my favourite meal of the day, apart from lunch and dinner, what is the revolution that you guys are introducing? We talked about, you know, there's only so many ways you can smash an avocado. Mm. There's only so many ways you can serve bacon and eggs. So give us a bit of a hint of what people can expect.
Sure. At Top Paddock, there was a moment that Nathan and I were chatting and I've proposed a few things on the menu. I've always eaten fresh fish. The availability on fresh fish in Byron Bay is just amazing.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
It's just absolutely incredible. And I honestly took it for granted for the last 30 years. Coming down to Melbourne, I was like, you know, it's just actually a bit of a battle to find it regularly. Mm-hmm. But we've always had fish for breakfast. You know, majority of Melbourne eats salmon or trout for breakfast. And so I said to Nathan, why don't we just have fresh fish? Why don't we have fresh snapper for breakfast? Why don't we do fresh kingfish for breakfast? And so that was one of the
makes
first...
sense. It happens in some of the, it happens in Scandinavia.
That's
it happens
right.
in Asia, in Japan, for example.
Exactly right. So we popped that snapper dish on the menu at Top Paddock. It went absolutely nuts, of course.
Soft shell crab.
And the soft shell crab. Yeah, same deal with soft shell crab. But the soft shell crab was an interesting one. the only fresh softshell crab available in Australia is through one aquaculture farm in Brisbane.
Yep.
They cost $5 a piece. They're expensive.
Over six now.
Over six.
Yep.
Yeah, see what food costs. Look at him.
Yeah, that's right.
Food costs food. $5.
That's right. And so, yeah, I've always just loved that classic combination that everyone's eaten in Australia. We've been pretty exposed to it, just a fresh seafood in a soft bun and, you know, a bunch of lime or lemon, and, you know, just it's reminiscent of growing up around Byron and Yamba and that type of stuff.
Mm.
So I try to do a Melbourne city version of the soft shell crab and crunchy soft shell crab in a soft brioche bun. Obviously, the soft shell crab in Australia, it's majority 90% of it's imported.
Yep.
From countries where the hygiene is not exactly the best.
So it's a brave move to use it in the first place.
That's right. Mm-hmm. The only reason I was going to use it, and the only way I was going to use it, is if we could purchase it fresh.
Yep.
So I worked with Angus at Watermark Seafoods in Brisbane. He supplies a lot of places, all of Andrew McConnell's restaurants as well. Mm-hmm. And so we jumped on board with those guys. He started sending them down, and so we're getting fresh soft shell crab. So that satisfied us, serving, you know, being proud of the product, the quality of the product, giving mm-hmm. Dignifying the customer. And so that was a bit of an interesting one. And then we started seeing orders for them at, 7 a.m. And then that really blew me away.
Right.
And that's quite a regular now. It's amazing. Mm. Yeah.
So, apart from a bit of seafood, what else are we having for breakfast?
A lot of those classic great ingredients, white anchovies, or there's seafood again. Mm-hmm. Jamón, of course.
Yep.
Gorgeous, beautiful, Serrano. Berico's a little hard under the $25 price bracket that we have in the cafe. But the Serrano, we sell a lot of that. It's great. Our chili eggs, you know, throwing a bunch of fresh chili through some eggs, some local mushrooms, usually pines if they're around, or when they're around, as it's sort of, you know, cooling off now, dying off now that season. But we keep getting the Otway shiitakes. We'll put those through. So the biggest part of Top Paddock and what we really tried to achieve and what we're going to achieve more at Kettle Black is that seasonal eating, where we're dignifying the customer by giving them the food that's available right now, that's local,
rather than having something that's available
all
year round.
That's exactly right. Asparagus is a classic example.
Yep.
Asparagus on a menu all year round is so fundamentally wrong.
It is inherently wrong.
Yep.
If Nathan, I want to come back to you. If we sort of start talking about using those seasonal ingredients and, you know, not having something on all year round, how much of a revolution or how difficult is it for your floor staff to be able to explain that, you know, we can't buy tomatoes, so that's why there's no tomatoes on your breakfast?
Yeah, look, I think it's about just having a menu that's quite clear and, you know, letting people know where your product is coming from. It's kind of like coffee as well. You know, you're only going to have certain beans available throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
We just try to let people know that it's a seasonal menu. And I think more and more people are expecting that and actually appreciate it.
What's the tough thing? It's one of the questions that I ask a lot for people who are in business, because there's not a lot of fat these days. You've got to be a little bit out of your mind to go into the restaurant business where, you know, probably a really good year, you may be looking at 2%.
Yep.
As a net profit.
Yep.
Why do you do it?
I often ask, I guess, myself that. And I think that the main thing is that you want to be able to be proud of what you do and control what you do. And I think, you know, if you get a good product with good people around you and you do it well, you'll always, you know, do well. I do see, you know, a lot of people opening restaurants and cafes. And the first thing that has to be sort of compromised is quality when people aren't making money. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword where...
Well, it is.
You know, you need the good quality. Yeah, you need the good quality produce to get people in.
Mm.
And then that will hopefully justify a turnover. But yeah, like you're right, it's 2-3% net profit is what people are working on when...
And that's a successful business.
That's right.
That's somebody who's ridiculously successful.
Yep. Yep.
I know people who are not able to do that, and it's quite distressing. So if that's the tough part, what's the easy part? What's the bit that you love?
I think they go hand in hand. The tough part, the fact that it is a tough game, is fine because it's what we love doing.
Mm.
It's a bit of a cliche, you know, that sort of stuff. But to be honest, I actually enjoy going to work, which is really rare. To have something you actually genuinely love doing and enjoy going and can't stop thinking about it. You wake up at 3 a.m. in a good way thinking about food and thinking about combinations, thinking
so
about
my, my waking up thinking about food at 3 a.m.
That's
is not
wrong.
Probably a good way. No, it's not a good way
at
all.
Yeah, that's very wrong. No, it's that keenness that you get. It's like a surfboard designer.
Yep.
Yeah, my father's a surfboard designer. He thinks about design at 2:30 in the morning because it excites him. Not because it's a job, not because he gets up in the morning and goes and digs holes or lays bricks, which is fine.
Yep.
But he does it because he actually genuinely loves it. Mm. He thinks about it all the time. And we're the same. We genuinely love it. We love it when you have a great service, you've satisfied customers, you've satisfied yourself. And that's the way I think you can only sort of survive working a lot, you know, if you have that satisfaction at the end of the day.
Because it's a ridiculously huge commitment for everybody involved in the business that you don't have much of a social life. And if you do, it's with people that are within the industry anyway.
Yep.
You have to turn down invitations for a dinner party on Saturday night because you simply cannot go. Mm-hmm. Although you guys aren't open at night, are you?
We're not, but, you know, Jesse gets up at 4:30 in the morning, so hopefully he wouldn't be going out for too many dinner parties on a Friday night.
No, you're going to bed at 8:30, damn, that's the thing.
Damn.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is all, we sort of hear it a lot. How difficult is it for you being in business with your wife?
We obviously, our first business was working hand in hand together every day, and then the second one as well. I think it's really tough because generally when you're having a hard time, you turn on those people you love before you turn on your staff.
Of course you do. Mm. They're always they're the easiest.
Yeah. We learned pretty quickly how to sort of deal with it. And I guess the key things were not to take it out on each other in at work. And then once you go home, to leave it at work and don't take it home. Although we've got two little kids now and a third one due in about a week. So she's got her hands full at home now, which is...
She doesn't have time to be doing anything else.
No.
Joy 94.9.
There's somebody else who's not in the middle of service, which is pretty good because he only works Monday to Friday and about 4 hours a day, is a fellow by the name of Raymond Capaldi. The reason I wanted to talk to Ray is because one of my favourite sporting events every 4 years is on. When it's not the Olympics, it's the Commonwealth Games. We are smashing everybody in the swimming pool. We are doing exceptionally well. And certainly on the cycling track as well. But I was very interested to talk about some of the food of Scotland. And so really, Ray Capaldi is my go-to man. It was either him or Gordon Ramsay, and Gordon wasn't available this time. Ray, good afternoon.
Oh, well, it's good to be the ring in there.
Well, you know, Gordon Ramsay is...
I can swear like Gordon Ramsay.
Well, I actually heard that you taught him to swear. Is that right?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Excellent. Tell me, that I was doing a bit of research in the week. Apart from deep-fried Mars bars, which Scotland is known for, and haggis, deep-fried doner kebabs, is this becoming a delicacy in Scotland?
Oh, I've never heard of that one, but they'll try anything, you know.
Well, anything you can deep-fry.
Anything they can shop. We're supposed to have the worst diet even in the world.
Well, I actually read that as well.
Yeah, so
Scotland has
pretty proud of that.
You've got a reputation for coronary and diet-related diseases, the highest in the world.
The highest in the world, and we're proud, because everything's deep-fried in the fryer with beef fat.
Excellent.
It's just beautiful stuff, you know?
Well, let's go through some of the things I found. So tell me, what are rumbledy-thumps?
What is...
Rumbledy-thumps.
Rumbledy-thumps is just smashed potato and turnip, and there's all... I mean, everybody's got their favourite recipes, but there's all different kinds, and it's just basically haggis and neeps, you know, that's what you serve with the haggis, so it's just smashed vegetables.
Excellent. What's how-towdy with dappered eggs?
How-towdy, that's just... I mean, how-towdy is another... It's a Scottish dish that is basically... There's so many different variations, this is a problem, you know. It's a bit like stovies. Stovies is another potato with smashed eggs and all that sort of stuff as well. Right. So it's a dish, stovies, and you put... Some people put sausages in it, some people put potatoes in it. But, you know, there's other famous ones where even in French cooking they use cullen skink, which is a smoked haddock soup, cream of smoked haddock soup. With, again, potatoes. Everything was potatoes because they made it.
And they pick on the way Irish.
Yeah, a bit like the Irish, but it's cheap stuff, you know. And the other one is there's another dish called crappit heid.
Yep.
Which is basically cod head that's been stuffed with oats and potato and liver, and so it's just using everything that they could use, you know. So that's Scottish food.
But I did find one that was oats, berries, whiskey and cream.
Kanakin.
There you go.
Yeah, Cranachan. Yeah, Cranachan's a very famous, again, there's all different recipes. Some people put honey in it, some people put different stuff in it, but Cranachan's a very famous one because, you know, Scotland, even though we've got the worst rate of diet in the world...
It all tastes good.
You see these big lorries going down in the middle of the night with full of seafood to Spain and all that, these different countries. Mm. It's got the best beef in the world, and it's got the best berries in the world in the central... belt of Scotland, and that's where you get all the beautiful raspberries that actually taste like raspberries, you know. But there's so many much different food, but there's only the bad ones only get mentioned all the time, you know.
Right.
You know, you've got great haggis, we've got the square sausage,
yep,
which is a lawn sausage, you know, it's square.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of great food in Scotland.
There was a couple of things that really did stick out for me. One is called Tipsy Laird.
Tipsy Laird, yeah, I've heard that. Again, it's just like a trifle, sort of based on a trifle, you know, lots of cream, lots of sponge, whiskey is always the main
whiskey in everything. What are fatty cutties?
Fatty cut, I've never heard of fatty cutties.
All right, because the next one's going to probably, you'll probably say I'm making this one up, but one of the things I did find when I was looking for Scottish food was something called Festy Cock.
Festy cock. Yeah. Never heard of that one.
I'm not making it. Wikipedia actually told me that one when I was looking. Yeah, you know, that very reliable source.
If it's on Wikipedia, it's definitely a dish, isn't it?
Well, apparently.
There's probably a few of them on a Saturday night. I don't know.
Yes, but I was quite taken by that one. I don't know why. and Carrigan moss, what's that?
Carrigan moss, basically. Carrigan moss is like a jelly set with carrageen. It's a carrageen seaweed. Now, in Scotland and Ireland, they're the only people that could produce all these. Nowadays, in cooking, in new style cooking, like the cooking that I do with the science and that, they've got all these seaweed sets, you know, like gelatine. It's like a gelatine, but you've got carrageen. You've got, so they're all red seaweeds and green seaweeds to thicken puddings.
Right. Oh, so like we're using agar-agar?
Right, agar-agar and all that stuff. Well, Scotland and Ireland were the only people that could do it at one time, make all these seaweeds, and perfectly, and that's where they used to get them all from. So all over the world, they used to supply them the powders with that. But, you know, in England, they've got England does another one with the carrageen moss, but they call it something different down there. It's basically set in cream with seaweed.
Right, okay, so now I've jumped onto... something that's not Wikipedia to find out more about this festicock, because I just want you to know I'm not making it up. So, and there's guys in the studio who also know that I'm not making this up, who believe they know you as well. So, on Shrove Tuesday, there is something that you can have on Shrove Tuesday. An alternative to Pancake Day dish in Scotland is a festicock made by rolling out a ball of finely ground oatmeal, folding it into a bird shape before baking it and eating as a substitute for cockerel on Shrove Tuesday.
Wow, there you are. I've never heard of it, but, you know, I've been out of Scotland for a long time now, but I've never heard of that one.
I'm sure there's many. Now, which one of you knows Ray?
I know Ray.
Well, you should have a
Ray, word. It's Nathan. How are you, mate? From Top Paddock and Apt back in the day. It's Nathan from Top Paddock, and obviously back in the day, Apt. I used to serve you at our first cafe. How are you, man?
Good. You?
Good. I was just thinking though. You've been smashing potato for years. I was wondering why you didn't come up with smashed avocado.
Well, you know what? Smashed avocado. Everybody's doing it, you know. And I'm not one of these persons who's got to do. Everywhere you go, he's got smashed avocado on there, you know.
Yeah, well, you'll be happy to know that. Top Paddock doesn't. We've kind of moved away from it as well. It's one of those things, isn't it?
Well, usually leaders in cafes, and you know, he's doing a great job, and everything you touch, it seems to turn into gold. So you're setting the force, and that's a great thing.
Oh, thanks, Ray.
Cheers, mate.
No problem.
Mate, I'm always grateful for your time. I know that we tried to do this last week, but you had a bit of an accident with your phone just before I was due to talk to you, which was a very foolish thing to do. I will continue to watch the Commonwealth Games from Glasgow on the television because I'm one of those nuts that will sit up all night and watch sport for no particular reason. Is anybody, any Scottish people we should be looking for in any of the competitions?
They're all busy trying to eat some haggis and all that stuff. I don't think we're going to do too well in the Commonwealth Games.
You're sitting currently fourth on the medal tally with a number of gold medals in the pool.
Really?
Yeah, a couple of gold medals in the pool.
In the pool, then what's that for, dunking people?
For doing bombies, mate. That's what you got the gold medals for.
You must be racing against herself or something, yeah.
Oh, no,
or is someone handing a pound note on the other side? So swim past.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. They drag a little pound note through the pool, and your kids are after it, mate. Good to talk to you.
All right, mate.
Thanks.
Good to talk to you guys.
Thanks,
Ray.
Take care,
guys. He's from Here and Grace. That is Ray Capaldi. He's a good man and always willing to take the piss out of himself, which is the fun. Raymond Capaldi was my previous guest talking about all things Scottish food. Of course, Here and Grace on Collins Street is his restaurant. You can Google that and, sorry, you can go to your favourite search engine and find Here and Grace. A really interesting place to go and eat and explore. It looks like Alice ran down the rabbit hole and got stoned. It's a very interesting interesting dining experience, and the food is certainly spectacular. He's a good man. So now we get to Two Birds, One Stone, Top Paddock and Kettle Black. Let's start with the ones that are already open. So Two Birds, One Stone has its own website?
Yeah, it does.
Which is? It's, I don't know.
Yeah, I would use your appropriate search engine and look for that as
very
well.
Very good. Top Paddock on the web?
Yep, likewise.
And you... Okay, let's try the Twitter handles. That might be easier for you, Nathan.
Twitter handles.
Well, they, you know what? How about I open that you just used? So Top Paddock is...
There we go. At Top Paddock.
Very good. That wasn't difficult. Kettle Black is... At Kettle Black Cafe?
At Kettle Black Cafe, yes.
Excellent. We're getting somewhere. And, of course, if you use your search engine, you can find Two Birds, One Stone as well. Where is Two Birds, One Stone?
It's in Claremont Street, South Yarra, just behind the Olsen Hotel.
Excellent. Mm. Where is Top Paddock?
Top Paddock is 658 Church Street in Richmond.
Excellent. And you are opening on Tuesday.
Yes.
The Kettle Black at 50 Albert Road, South Melbourne.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nathan Templeton, Jesse McTavish, thank you both for coming and sharing your Melbourne knowledge with us and your food philosophy. We wish you great success with your business.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm sure it will be well supported, as all Melbourne cafes are. You've done very well with getting your press so far as well. So whoever's running your PR, doing a very good job.
That would be us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. I will be back next Saturday, of course, for another hour of Cravings with you here on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.